You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
As the protests at Standing Rock, North Dakota continue against the nearly 1,200-mile-long Dakota Access Pipeline that runs from oil fields in northwestern North Dakota to Illinois, tensions between law enforcement and activists have escalated. The protesters, who include members of over 500 Native American tribes, have gathered to protest to protect water resources and sacred cultural sites. Last week, the Army Corps of Engineers issued an eviction notice ordering them to evacuate federal lands by December 5th. Joining us now to talk about the situation and the future of the No DAPL movement are Oscar-nominated filmmaker Josh Fox, creator of the Gasland series and his most recent film, How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. And also joining us soon, Dallas Goldtooth, a member of the Mde Wa Kan Tan Dakota and Diné tribes, and the Keystone XL campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show now. Well, hello, Josh.
Thanks, Leonard. It's great to be back.
You've just returned from your second trip to Standing Rock. How have the protests changed since your first visit?
Well, it's a lot colder, and the police have really ramped up their tactics. So I think there is a great deal of vigilance on the ground. I mean, Thanksgiving was an unbelievable weekend. Of course, the tribes don't call it Thanksgiving. They call it Thanks-taking. They call it Survivor's Day. It's a day of mourning, not a day of celebration, because the myth of Thanksgiving obviously is a lie, and that Thanksgiving was actually a massacre. And this fact is not lost on the tribes, who are going to their native burial grounds and finding rows and rows of riot gear, militarized police up on top of their burial grounds. I was part of a protest on Thanksgiving Day where you had literally hundreds of water protectors. They're not called protesters because protester is a colonized word. They're water protectors going across the Cannonball River to the burial grounds on the sort of lip and the banks where I witnessed weeks earlier police shooting rubber bullets, pepper spraying, macing peaceful, unarmed protesters directly in the face with no provocation. And there you are staring down this huge line of riot police. And me as a member of the press, and also I would say part of the action, you know, you're taking your life in your own hands at that point, because just a week ago, the police shot rubber bullets and hosed down with water cannons protesters at 20 degree weather, which is, according to the United Nations, lethal force, because you cannot expose someone to instant hypothermia like that. And another, and one of the protectors, Sophia Wolanski, who's actually from New York, I think she's from Brooklyn, she had a concussion grenade hurled at her arm, and it blew up and it shattered her arm. It ripped it to shreds. She's still in surgery, I believe, a week later, so she doesn't lose that arm. But had it hit her in the neck or in the head, there's no question she would have died from that injury.
Although that has been disputed by the police there.
Well, let's be absolutely clear about this. The Morton County Sheriff's Department is not telling the truth. In fact, they are lying. They are lying through their teeth. I was standing next to my colleague, Aaron Schrody, who's a CNN correspondent, works for ABC News, was the youngest congressional candidate in the history of California. She was shot in the back with a rubber bullet while she was conducting an interview. I heard the shot. She was standing right next to me. The Morton County Sheriff's Department insists that this never happened. The Morton County Sheriff's Department insists that they were using water cannons to put out fires that were lit by protectors. This is all fiction, and it is a serious crisis when law enforcement simply does not tell even a speck of truth, one iota of the truth, then law enforcement, in fact, becomes lawlessness and breaks down at the very fundamental level.
Dallas, how many people have been arrested so far?
You know, we've had, right now, I think the number is over 450 active cases, well, pushing up near 500 arrests. You know, and all those arrests have been ranging from, you know, for a crazy amount of accusations, you know, that designating our folks as rioters, even though we're peaceful, it's peaceful marches, stating that we put police in danger for locking ourselves to equipment. It's just a ludicrous escalation and excessive use of force by police, and just really it's absurd. So, you know, a lot of those cases are being thrown out of the courts once they get to before the judges. You know, there's a lot of charges of felonies, and a lot of them have been dismissed. Just recently, there was a dismissal of some charges against a young Native woman called Red Fawn, who was charged with discharging of a weapon, potentially, you know, shooting towards police officers. But there's not enough evidence, and they have to throw those charges out. And now all that's left is a remaining charge, a federal charge of possession of a firearm by a felon.
Isn't there a blizzard there right now?
It is. I am literally in a yurt on top of a hill with 40 mile an hour winds outside, and it's not too cold. It's about 30 degrees right now, which is not too cold for North Dakota. But it is a blizzard that's been going since yesterday. It's supposed to go through tomorrow. There are 3-foot snow drifts all over the place. But people are warm. People are. We've done a good job of making sure our people are taken care of, and that we have heated spaces for everybody.
How long have you been involved in organizing for the Indigenous Environmental Network? Has it interfered with your other career as a comedian?
It's actually has given me some amazing, amazing material for comedic fodder. You know, I think that I've been working with the Indigenous Environmental Network for about 3 years. I first came on in the amazing fight against Keystone XL in supporting actually the same communities. These are the same people, the Dakota, Lakota, Nakota people of the Ocheti Shakoni, who fought and defeated the Keystone XL pipeline, who are now fighting against Dakota Access. So, you know, I've had an amazing experience being with IEN and working with frontline Indigenous communities all across Turtle Island, which is also known as so-called North America. So it's been really great.
Josh, how did you become involved with the protests?
I was actually invited by Shailene Woodley to participate in a march at Union Square in New York City. The Youth Council of Standing Rock are the people who started this movement. They're young kids who are very upset about the climate implications and the environmental and water implications, and most of all, the indigenous sovereignty implications of having a major oil pipeline go underneath their major watershed. Shailene and I became good friends when we were working on the Bernie Sanders campaign. We were both Bernie Sanders surrogates. And a lot of the Standing Rock movement, I think, picks up where Bernie Sanders' campaign left off. So these kids ran all the way from North Dakota to Washington, D.C. to make their point to President Obama. They arrived in New York. We had a rally there. And even though they were 4 hours late, people stayed and waited for them, and the rally went on. And that's when I knew something really, really special was happening. Since then, the Standing Rock camp has swelled, like I said, over Thanksgiving to 15,000 people.
And hasn't one of your colleagues, Dea Schlossberg, who produced your latest film, arrested last month, charged with felonies that might mean decades of jail time because she was filming the civil disobedience?
Yeah, reporters are being targeted. They're being harassed. Amy Goodman was charged with criminal trespass for doing her job as a reporter. Aaron Schrody, like I said, shot in the back. Shailene herself was arrested for live streaming when she had a 40,000-person audience. And yes, Dea Schlossberg, in another part of North Dakota, in a solidarity action called Keep It in the Ground, where activists were shutting down oil sands pipelines, she was thrown in jail for 53 hours straight, and then charged with felonies that would have brought her 45 years. Thankfully, and this is an update that just happened, that North Dakota has settled that case and is throwing that out because it's ludicrous. As Dallas said, a lot of this is intimidation tactics. What's not intimidation tactics, however, is sheer intimidation, but is actual violence, is the way the police in Morton County are behaving towards unarmed protesters. It's frankly a disaster. Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, 20 members of Congress have called upon President Obama to please bring in the Department of Justice. This is a situation analogous to what we saw in Mississippi and Alabama when freedom riders were being thrown in jail in the civil rights movement and harassed and beaten by a racist police force backed up by racist governors. That is what's happening in North Dakota, and we cannot stand for it.
Now, Dallas, isn't this movement being led by Native Americans? What's the significance of that and the message, keep it in the ground?
You know, this movement is indigenous-led. I mean, this movement, as a lot of the significant moments in the recent climate justice movement within the past 10 years, you know, has been led by indigenous peoples or by frontline communities poor communities who are on the frontline fight, whether it's at the extraction point of fossil fuel development or at the refinement or during these infrastructure projects, these transportation projects, just like this pipeline. This is all connected to the greater Keep It in the Ground movement, which is really a major push for us to really properly address climate change in the most direct way as possible, which is, to seek a moratorium on new fossil fuel development and to see the closure of current fossil fuel development for the benefit of all of us. And it just so happens that a lot of these major places where these critical fights are happening are on or adjacent to indigenous, currently occupied indigenous territories, whether it's in Alaska or it's in the Gulf Coast or it's in the American Southwest or the Powder River Basin, or if it's in the Bakken oil shale where Dakota Access oil is coming from. This is just, we had a huge win in the fight against Keystone XL, and the only way that was, one of the major parts of that win was the voices, the stories, and the heart of the Native people who are just defending the protection of their water, defending the protection of the land, and defending their rights as indigenous peoples to decide for themselves what happens to the land, what happens to their water, what happens to their bodies. And, so this is all a part of a greater pushback against a system that's predicated upon the oppression of our people and the advancement of fossil fuels in a time when we need the opposite. So it's a pretty powerful time right now. And also, I just want to say, yes, the youth are an amazing part of this, and they've always led in this effort. And they continue to, Native youth are continuing to step up to speak on their own behalf and for future generations.
I'm speaking with Dallas Goldtooth, who's a Keystone XL campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network, and with filmmaker Josh Fox, reporting from Standing Rock. Josh, the pipeline is being developed by Dakota Access LLC, a subsidiary of the Dallas, Texas Corporation Energy Transfer Partners. How did they determine the route of the pipeline? Wasn't it originally planned to go through Bismarck, Dakota?
Interestingly enough, the pipeline was originally supposed to go through predominantly white Bismarck. The people in Bismarck complained about that. So our Army Corps of Engineers, which is basically an organization that is controlled by the president, decided to reroute it through Native American territory, which is a fine part of our environmental racist traditions in the United States of America. So what this became was an issue not only and through their only watershed. And it's clear that pressure has to be put right now on Barack Obama, because where this stands, there is a crucial permit that the pipeline company lacks to drill underneath the water. Army Corps has not granted that permit yet. We would like to see Barack Obama deny that permit to the Dakota Access Pipeline Company, because as you know, these pipelines leak with incredible frequency and with devastating effects. The Yellowstone River, the Kalamazoo River, the beaches of Santa Barbara, Mayflower, Arkansas. I could rattle off to you hundreds of oil spills.
Well, there were two very recent ones in Alabama. The pipeline delivery system, on Halloween, an explosion along the Colonial Pipeline. That accident was six of the year in Alabama for the company that owns it. But don't Indians have sovereignty over their own land? How did this pipeline wind up on Indian territory?
Yeah, one thing, just to jump on that last question, one thing that folks don't know, so Energy Transfer Partners, the Dakota Access is a subsidiary of that, and they're charged with the construction of it. But the operation of the pipeline is going to another subsidiary, Sunoco Corporation, which has the worst track record of any of all pipeline companies for most amount of leaks in the past 10 years. That is on paper, that they have the worst record for having the most leaks. So that's just it adds to the absurdity. But as far as,
sorry, Dallas, go ahead. Sorry,
in the United States, the routing is right now is technically it's routed. The pipeline is proposed to go just 4 miles north of the tribe of the reservation, of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, but it is within our traditional treaty territory, which was in the Treaty of 1851, the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1851, designated this entire area as our land, or was negotiated that this would be our land. And that, on our side, that treaty was never nullified. It was never voided. That's still standing. So, that, but from the perspective of the state of North Dakota, and from the perspective of the Army Corps of Engineers, they're saying, well, technically, it's out off the reservation, so you have limited ability to comment on this issue. We have a right. There is federal policy that a project like this, that tribes have to be consulted. But what happened was, Dakota Access and the state and local permitting agencies created the route, came up with all the plans, drew up all the designs, all the paperwork, and got all the started getting the permitting process for the state in place. And then they went to the tribe and said, "Hey, we want to talk, consult with you on this project." That's not consultation. Consultation is not when the enemy is knocking at your doors, when the company the company's bulldozers are right outside your doorstep. Consultation happens at the very beginning. And that's the crux. That is the very focal point of the tribal's legal arguments in this case, is that they're breaking federal law. They broke federal law, mm-hmm. went against federal policy of having adequate, proper tribal consultation on a project that would impact the drinking water of their of this nation, that would impact sacred sites and cultural sites all along the proposed route, that the tribes numerous times spoke up and said they were there and they were not heard. And there's this ongoing myth that the tribes had ample had opportunity to speak up against this pipeline, and they never did. There is documentation that Dakota Access in North Dakota went to the tribe, made a presentation October 2014, and the tribe said, "This is not, we do not approve of this pipeline." So there, you know, the tribe has always been against this pipeline and continues to stand its ground.
Why have other tribes joined the Standing Rock Sioux in this movement?
Oh, that's the beautiful part of this. It's actually, we are seeing the largest mobilization of tribal unity across North America in generations, for years and years and generations. That we have right now over, of the 365 tribal nations in the United States, 320 of them have all sent a formal declaration of support, have sent letters to the White House asking for the White House to hear what the tribal's concerns and to stop this pipeline. And that's just for the United States. There are an extra 300 tribes up in, or 250 tribes in Canada who have stated the very same in support of Standing Rock. There's a federal lawsuit the tribe has filed against the Army Corps of Engineers based on the arguments I presented earlier. And a number of other tribes downriver, the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, who's just on the southern border of the Standing Rock Rez, is also on the Missouri River. They've joined that lawsuit. The Yankton Sioux tribe, which is farther downriver, has also filed its own, is also in the current process of filing its own lawsuit against the United States government. So that's the beautiful part of this whole thing, is that it has really brought together, quote unquote, Indian country. Like, people have stood up like we have never seen before. And it's really, really amazing thing to see.
Isn't it often argued that projects like this bring income into the Indian reservations?
It could be. But actually, one thing is a really good, really amazing statistic that we just learned here is that since this whole fight has started, crime all across the reservation has dropped. Like, crazy. There have been no violent crimes in the past 6 months. Like, one major issue in Indian country is a very serious issue, is suicide and a lot of depression amongst young folks. And this Standing Rock had actually was going through some really, really tough times dealing with youth suicide, teen suicide. And those numbers have completely dropped to zero.
Do you think
since this has happened?
Dallas, do you think that's because the protest camp itself is such an amazing, beautiful place, and that people have found this incredible meaning in this struggle and reconnected with the sort of spirituality of this that's at the core of this movement? Do you credit that?
Oh yeah, I think that the amazing part of us is that we're demonstrating what we're fighting against, which is this pipeline in a system that has created these structures that go through a lot of vulnerable and impacted communities, but we're also demonstrating what we're fighting for.
But wait, in contrast, officials at the Morton County Sheriff's Office have described the demonstration as an ongoing riot, and they've released photos that they say show protesters allegedly setting fires and using aggressive tactics while trying to dismantle a police barricade on Backwater Bridge.
Can I address this? That's insane, and that is a blatant lie. The Morton County Sheriff's Department, for what I've seen with my own eyes, are people who stand in front of them and say, "We are praying for you. We love you," without aggression. And they're being maced and they're being pepper sprayed and they're being treated with unbelievable aggression. In fact, I have documented this on video. I've put out videos through Now This, and I'm coming out with one in Rolling Stone later today that shows exactly what happens. The Morton County Sheriff's Department is saying, these are rioters. That's crazy to me. I am committed to Standing Rock because when I got there and when I went to Ochetisakoan, the main camp there, I was so unbelievably moved by watching a self-organizing community that is built on generosity, that's built on ceremony and prayer, that's built on helping your fellow man and woman, and the incredible amount of respect that you live and breathe on that camp for the water, for the air, for democracy, for human rights, for each other. And to be characterized as rioters, one can only assume that the Morton County Sheriff's Department are the ideological and genealogical descendants of General Custer. And this evacuation notice from the Army Corps of Engineers actually happens to fall on Custer's birthday. Another aspect of this, and it happened on the day after Thanksgiving. It's as if we haven't learned anything from the 500 years of genocidal history against Native Americans. It is appalling. And as a journalist, for the police department to be quoted is often one of those things that you must do. But what happens if the police department is completely blatantly lying? Well, they've lost all credibility, and that is why it's so important that independent journalists have been putting their lives on the line to get these stories and get these pictures, which so obviously contradict the Morton County Sheriff's Department.
Dallas, is this particularly a Dakotan thing? An environmental officer from one of the local tribes said recently that North Dakota and South Dakota fight as over who can be more mean to the Native Americans.
There has been an incredibly appalling track record in North Dakota and South Dakota of systemic racism all across the board. I mean, in South Dakota, North Dakota, as well as neighboring Minnesota, Native folks make up actually a slim percentage of the population, but we're occupying 20% to 30% of the jails and prisons. I mean, that is a great example of the systemic racism that we're faced against. We are not blind to the oppression that we see here. It is part of a common day experience. So, for us, is this, what we're seeing with Morton County and the verbiage that they're using, the language that they're using, merely to legitimize the violent oppression, the usage of weapons upon our peaceful protesters is appalling, yes. Disgusting, yes. But is it surprising? No. This is just a snapshot of a lot of our communities have to deal with. And so, we continue to advocate. And then the beautiful part about this is because of this fight, it's exposing a lot of that systemic racism that we're pushing against. And it has brought together an amazing array of people from all walks of life, from different colors and creed, to this space to stand in solidarity on this issue. And so, that's the beautiful part that I really see coming out of this.
And this is why we're calling on Obama and the Department of Justice to step in. And we're going to be doing that. And I don't know if you know this yet, Dallas, but our good friend Jane Kleb in Bold, the Bold Alliance, is calling for an occupation of the National Mall on December 12th. We are going to be bringing teepees down there. We're going to be calling for a protest camp at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. So stay tuned to theboldalliance.org to find out more details about that. A protest camp like Ochetisakoan shouldn't be just in North Dakota. We should make one in Washington to remind Barack Obama that he has a civic responsibility towards human rights and democracy in America.
President-elect Donald Trump holds stock in the company that's building the disputed Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. Has he commented on the situation? Do either of you know?
Go ahead, Josh.
Not that I know of. He's been obviously very, very aggressive in promoting fossil fuels. And this is a big, big thing that's hanging over the entire protest. However, Barack Obama can do something now. He can't simply hide behind, oh, Trump will reverse any decision. You know, that's operating out of fear. You need to operate out of what's going to be, what needs to happen, what needs to happen right now. It would be such an incredible obliteration of his human rights legacy, of his legacy on Native American lands and Native American territory to not stand up right now. So, of course, Trump has been incredibly aggressive. One thing that I worry about is the violence that Donald Trump has encouraged at his rallies, and that same violence being mirrored in a police department, which clearly is operating with lawlessness. This police department, they do not identify themselves. They don't have name badges. So when you see an officer throw a concussion grenade, you don't know the name of that officer. That, to me, is illegal. They have blockaded North Dakota 1806, which is the primary artery from the Ochetisakoan camp to Bismarck, which impedes ambulances and adds travel time to anyone who's seriously injured, and that was a factor in Sophia Wilansky's case as well.
And we have very little time left, but I just want to ask about what's happened recently. Last week, the Army Corps of Engineers ordered that public access to Ochetisakoan camp be closed on December 5th and ordered the eviction of the protesters. And North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple just filed an executive order yesterday to remove activists from that camp. Has there been any support from local politicians or government officials?
There has been, you know, so to clarify, the Army Corps did file and state that they are asking folks to move, and what we've through further clarification with the Army Corps, that was done so that they have no legal liabilities should something happen. I mean, and also I see it as a passing of the buck to the state of North Dakota to do whatever they want to continue this reign of violence that they've been placing our people in. And I think that, you know, Dalrymple's executive order, there have been a number of state agencies who have stated that they are not planning to act upon that executive order. But it's still concerning that at any point he could call in the National Guard and using state police to do a sweep of this camp. There have been there's been an amazing wave of support. We've had everyone from Bernie Sanders to Keith Ellison. We've had a number of other folks who have stood up and have called for basically for President Obama to step in and to continue to put pressure on this White House administration to keep to its commitments to indigenous peoples, but then also to keep to his commitments to address climate change. So, you know, we are continuing to be here. This coming weekend, there's over 2,000 veterans all across the United States who are coming to camp to stand in solidarity. It's going to be amazing a day on December 5th. We, as a camp, are not moving. We are sticking to our position that we are on treaty rights. This is our land, and we are not going other folks have stated, is that, you know, it's absurd for us in 2016 to be faced with a threat of being removed from our own land just like our ancestors did.
Dallas Goldtooth is the Keystone XL campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network and a comedian, and Josh Fox is a filmmaker. His latest is How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much, Leonard, for covering this.